Well, folks, I think we're going to settle in and get started here. My name is Jonathan Bishop. I'm the chair of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, and I'm going to call this meeting to order. Caitlin, can you go over the meeting procedures?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So thank you everyone for joining us at Delray Yacht Club, and we're grateful to have the AGP team supporting our audio visual stuff. If you're new to this space, restrooms are just down the hall, and help yourself to refreshments at the back of the room. If you need Wi-Fi, we have it written at the table towards the front doors. It is DRYC underscore clubhouse. And the password is capital P PALAWAN 1108. This meeting is in a hybrid format in which members in the public are participating in person and remotely. And for members in the public participating remotely, if you need technical support using Zoom, please email IT at agpvideo.com. In order to provide, or in order to pr for the public to participate, you must be in the room or on Zoom to make public comment. Members of the public can request a comment in the following ways. If you're in person, please fill out a speaker card by the front of the room and hand it to myself or Luke. And if you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item under which you'd like to speak. The raise hand function is at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. If you're calling in over the phone, dial star 9 to raise your hand and star 6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded in live stream, so we ask that you please speak clearly. For members who are in person, please remember to turn on your microphones when speaking and turn them off when you've finished. And that'll conclude logistics. I recommend we move to member roll call for attendance.
Please do.
Okay, I will be calling members in alphabetical order, by last name. And feel free to also state your affiliation when I call you. Give me one moment, please. Okay. Sabrina Ashton.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Sabrina Ashton from the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board.
Jonathan Bishop.
John Bishop. Chief Deputy Director, State Water Board.
Let me zoom a little closer for everyone. Jacob Berman.
Present, alternate to LA City Councilwoman Tracy Park.
Megan Edick, joining us remotely.
Good morning, everyone. This is Megan Edick with California State Parks.
Tom Ford.
Tom Ford, Director, Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program.
Dean Francois.
Dean Francois here, Mayor of Hermosa Beach. I represent the Council of Governments.
Annalisa Moe.
Hi, everybody. Annalisa Moe, pronouns she, her. I'm with the Heal the Bay, Associate Director of Science and Policy.
Dan Murphy.
Representing Los Angeles County Fire Department's Lifeguard Division.
Jenny Newman.
Hi, Jenny Newman, representing California Environmental Protection Agency and the LA Water Board.
Warren Ontiveros.
Good morning, everyone. Warren Ontiveros with the Department of Beaches and Harbors, alternate for our director, Gary Jones.
Aaron Ordower.
Present, representing Supervisor Lindsay Horvath.
David Peterson.
Good morning, Dave Peterson, representing Las Virgenes Municipal Water District.
Michelle Persoff.
Good morning, Michelle Burisoff, alternate for Assemblymember Isaac Bryan.
Lauren Pizer-Mains.
Lauren Pizer-Mains, alternate for Senator Ben Allen.
Michael Quill.
Michael Quill, Marine Programs Director at LA Waterkeeper.
Greg Rochelle.
Good morning, Greg Rochelle, President, Black Surfers Collective.
Lauren Salisbury.
Good morning, Lauren Salisbury, alternate for Misty Kearns, President and CEO of Santa Monica Travel and Tourism.
Rory Skye, excuse me.
Rory Skye, Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy.
Eric Stein, joining us remotely.
Eric Stein, SCORP. I am the Vice Chair of the Technical Advisory Committee.
Clark Stevens.
Good morning, representing Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains.
Martha Tremblay.
Good morning, Martha Tremblay, alternate for Robert Ferrante, LA County Sanitation Districts.
And Genevieve Osmena. And I think, did I miss anyone?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Aaron Wilson Olgan.
Aaron Wilson, California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm the regional manager for R5, Region 5.
Okay, thank you. That'll conclude member roll call.
Thank you very much. Okay, now it's time for public comment. Public comment is for items that are not on the agenda. They generally will be limited to 4 minutes total. If you have a comment on an item on the agenda, please indicate that when you're called and we'll put you on that item. Caitlin, can you call the folks for public comment?
Yes. At this time, we have 10 individuals that would like to provide public comment. Six of those are for general comment item one. So I'll call those in order of the request received. First we have is Christine Q, followed by Jen Kurland. Christine, give us 1 moment to load your timer for 4 minutes.
Great. My first time.
I'm sorry. Give us, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. You have the floor.
Great. This is my first time here. I've joined the meeting by Zoom, so I recognize some of your lovely faces, but this is quite exciting. I'm really happy to be here. Christina Koo, I'm trying to impress you. I am actually elected officer at the club, Democratic Club, called Dems for the Protection of Animals, which is a charter Democratic Club. Not just to impress you, but I'm really here on my own to let you know about the Biona wetlands that I have been following since I live nearby. I am a resident who just appreciates nature and protection of wildlife as they cannot advocate for themselves. So I just want to make a few points that we've been trying to convey to all the different agencies, and some of it range from just pure science to being compassionate, caring about our nature type points. So the first one is we've been educated about the sea level rise impact will be worse if the state allows Biona project to proceed. The creek and sides of levees are now protecting the habitat. So any disturbances will definitely harm our coastal safety. And we understand that 2.2 million cubic yards are going to be, you know, dug up, and it's a very machine heavy project that we've been following and reading. And just as a layperson, I'm being honest, when we read about what was being planned, it sounded really terrible. So that's why so many people got involved, because it's just straightforward physics and science. And sure enough, you know, at the Superior Court in Los Angeles, the judge has, you know, made a decision on this and said there's an injunction, no more work can be done, because there were some major flaws. And we follow that. We follow the measurements, we follow the levees, we follow the science about the protection of this area, which is already designated as the ecological reserve. And we understood the decision, but apparently there are a lot of other folks involved who just don't understand. And we were very confused by it, and we were following why there was this confusing logic. And we follow the money. And a lot of folks who are, you know, opposed and want to continue to dig up and to disturb this spot, it's all backed by so much money. We were appalled as citizens. So we kept following and following. It's literally like a mystery. And it's gotten so many people just sort of up in arms saying, we are trusting the people who are supposed to protect nature and vote for them to do this. And they're really betraying us. So in the community, there's really a sense of betrayal. We just don't understand why some of these departments aren't following just pure science. It's not political. We just want an ecological reserve to be protected. So that's what we're here to ask about. And, you know, there's a blueprint for exactly what you can do, and we'll make the job easy for you. We've come across the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve Gentle Restoration Plan. There are 20 points in there, and it's very easy to follow. We are not scientists, and we are not ecologists, but we read this and we understand and actually makes sense. And it's very affordable. It's cheap. It doesn't cost millions and millions of dollars. So I guess the question from residents is, why can't we just do this first? I mean, give us some answers. Why can't we just follow the simple, cheap plan and save the wetlands and have our coastal lands become much safer and not disturb it? So that's our main question. And of course, the other question is, why not listen to what the Superior Court judge ruled? And a lot of rigs and machines are going up in the wetlands, in the biodiversity wetlands, and a lot of people are confused
why
that's happening.
Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
The next speaker we have is Jen Kurland. I did note that she also indicated she'd like to speak under item 2E, so I just wanted to check if you'd like to speak under general comment or an item later in the agenda. If you'd like to speak now, go ahead and raise your hand virtually. Okay, we'll move on to the next request. The next requester we have is Robert Vandehoek, followed by Annie Abram. Robert, you should now be able to unmute yourself. You have the floor.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. There's a little bit of background noise.
Oh, can you hold just a second? Okay, I'm back. Thank you. So background noise is gone, I hope?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'd like to do a lesson as a scientist on ecology and a theory. It's a concept called source and sink. And what that indicates is that an area where an animal population, this is referring to animal ecology, you have the main area where an animal reproduces and then the offspring disperse and go to an area that's called the sink, which is where they fall victim to being prey to a predator. But this is how ecology works. It's different than survival of the fittest. It kind of explains how an animal population lives. In the case of the Biona wetlands within the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, we have a source area, which are our communities like Playa del Rey, Venice, the neighborhood communities of urban areas where the rat, the Norway rat of Europe, lives amongst the humans because it can only live with humans. It can't, the rat cannot live in nature, in natural habitats. So what happens is that they reproduce amongst the humans underneath our buildings and our trash and areas like that. And then they reproduce and they live well with humans. And then they spread to the young rats move into the natural area of the Biona wetlands. And they're quickly captured by a coyote or owl at night or hawk. And they're not really in the Biona wetlands, but a whole myth is out there that this non-native animal of Europe invades natural areas. And this is just one example we can discuss. So that's something for you to understand. And another concept related to our estuary and whether we have fresh water or salt water is that estuaries do include fresh water, and this ecology is also misunderstood because oceanographers and marine biologists and people with an agenda want us to think that estuaries are salt water, and that's true, but it's also not true because an estuary can also include fresh water. For example, the San Francisco Bay estuary extends all the way to Sacramento and upper parts of the Delta, but there's no salt water there and no brackish water. Even in downtown Sacramento, the river goes up and down 1 foot with the high tides and low tides due to the lunar cycle, because the salt water makes a wedge holding back the fresh water. And that happens in the Bayona River also, where at the back part of the Bayona River, you have fresh water. And there is where you have tules and cattails and other reed-like vegetation. And native birds depend on that for breeding populations, and they're now at risk. And the song sparrow and the common yellowthroat are two of these songbirds that really depend on the reed vegetation that we continue to destroy.
Thank you, Robert. That's the end of your comment period.
The next speaker we have is Annie Abram. You should now be able to unmute yourself.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You have the floor.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm talking about the 2E issue about the Bayona, item 13 or 2E. What Robert was trying to say, from what I heard, is that there are really essential lives here at and Robert, as well as Christina before him, who had, I want to reemphasize what has been said, that there are essential lives here in the Bayona wetlands. And the Superior Court has already decided to let it be, leave it alone. This is one of the things that we have to do these days. We are in a time frame where environmental impact of our existence is very heavy. Any kind of movement, any kind of destruction, any kind of change we're making is making a huge impact, because we have crossed a line of destroying and taking over so much. There's absolutely no need to have Bayona on the agenda at this time. We need to understand that respecting nature and leaving alone this little sliver of land where there are thousands and thousands of animals that are so essential for our ecosystem balance. There's more than 1,700 species living there with their families, whom are keeping our ecosystem in balance. Our ecosystem being in balance is healthy for our environment. That is exactly what we need, in ocean, on land, everywhere. And destroying any kind of habitat is causing imbalancement. In this case, this Bayona wetland had been shrunken for so many years, and this little sliver of land where there is peace, harmony, but also a healthy ecosystem. We need to protect it, not to destroy it. What we're pleading today is, please remove this from the agenda. Please protect Bayona wetlands. Bayona needs protection, not destruction, not drilling, not gas company or methane excuses. All sorts of excuses had been coming, raining over and over, despite the fact that there is Superior Court saying, let it be, drop it, do not destroy. There are lives here. So many of them are endangered and going extinct. These animals are healthy news for us. When they come back, it is good news for a human race to survive. Without animals, we cannot. With money does not bring anything. This destruction, which we call construction, is not going to fix anything. And most especially drilling and methane is going to destroy furthermore. Look at Aliso Viejo for a good example. We need to protect Bayona. This little sliver of land is very sacred. Let's protect it. Let's remove the name of Bayona drilling. Let's leave it alone. If anything that needs to happen needs to be minor, keep up with it. That's it. Let's protect the animals. Let's protect this nature land. And let us all be healthy with it. When we heal nature, when we rewild and re-welcome all the different animals, all habitats, we will have healthier environment. It is good for us. It is good for our planet. It's good for human existence. Please hear our plea. Remove Bayona from the agenda of drilling. Thank you so much for having this meeting. I truly appreciate it. We are all very grateful, and much blessings to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. I will just comment that Bayona is not on the agenda today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. But whenever, please protect.
Thank you for your comments, Annie. We will move on to the next speaker. Michael Fujimori, I see you have your hand raised. You did request to speak on another item. Would you like to comment under this item?
Yes, please.
Okay, so
thank you.
We will have your timer going, and the next to speak is Jen Kurland, followed by Mitchell Lockman. Michael, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. I'm calling to add my voice to others who have mentioned them, talked about the Bayona wetlands. I'm just asking that you please remove item 13 from the comprehensive conservation and management plan. Any so-called renovation of the Bayona wetlands would be a disaster for several reasons. One, it would displace over 1,700 species of wildlife who have lived there for thousands of years. Second, it would increase the already horrific traffic that we endure day after day for years, while this bulldozing and destruction would eliminate the last remaining coastal wetlands in Los Angeles. Third, it would allow SoCalGas to expand its dangerous fossil fuel operations under the wetlands, risking another Aliso Canyon disaster. I'm in favor of a gentle restoration plan outlined in the excellent website defendbayonawetlands.org, which would not disturb the wetlands and address needed improvements. So I'm just asking, please, to leave these precious wetlands alone and save what little nature still exists in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michael. The next speaker we have is Jen Kurland, followed by Rachel Lockman. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm here to represent a number of people in my community who cannot come, just to let everyone know that there are a lot more people behind the few people you hear today. I reiterate all the comments made for item 2E, and would also like to put out, it seems like number 13 in that item is kind of buried. I just heard someone say that Bayona Wetlands was not on the agenda. But it's if they're trying to, be devious and push that underneath some other agenda item, which does get passed, and this is some sort of caveat, I think that's disingenuous. And Bayona Wetlands needs to be removed from 2E and be dealt with separately for all the very realistic and reasons people have said. We can't go back. You can't unrestore an area after you've already ruined that habitat. You can't go and put the fossil fuels back out of our air, back into the ground. So thank you again for your time and this genuine procedure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Next, we have Mitchell Lockman. Jane Velez Mitchell.
Hello, folks, ladies and gentlemen. I have an article from the New York Times and National Atmospheric Organization dealing with the ocean warming caused from CO2s, usually from automobile exhaust pipes, traffic congestion. I think this is a state matter that needs overview, like Senator Ben Allen, who's not here. But from the ocean warming, this national state organization, atmospheric group, they're saying that basically the ocean is dying. I mean, we're not. This has to do with Santa Monica Bay. Just looking at Santa Monica Bay, we've had. And by the way, parenthetically, this is what I think you should be looking at: is this algae bloom. Last time I was here, we were just finishing, but still remained the algae bloom, and then we just finished up another acute one, and it was all over Santa Monica Bay, and it went. I made phone calls. I couldn't get any further than. Farther, I should say, than Ventura was up there, and you couldn't find any more of it beyond that. But in the past, it's been all over the West Coast. It's killing, basically, killing the life system that we depend on, from the krill, where the whales need it, to the starfish, the mollusks. The birds, the contaminated seals, the porpoises. I usually don't take very long, but this is a crisis, and it's going to have to come from the state, and that's our state Senator Ben Allen, who's difficult to even have a meeting with, if impossible. So I basically, that's it. I think, but there's one more issue. This algae bloom was localized. There's residue remaining from the past, from the Hyperion plant that just in the past and didn't even treat it. You know, the ocean is a dumping ground, and other systems, sewage systems along the coast. I know Santa Cruz, they dump it in the ocean. We've lost habitat. The other thing is that the bull kelp, which is monstrous kelp, it's not around anymore. It's pretty much depleted. So is kelp. This is coming out of our sewage system, and also the agriculture. This is a complex problem. It's also coming from agriculture, which is dependent on nitrates. Coming from the petrol, we're basically living in a synthetic world. If you go into the marina right here, you dive in, you'll be coated with oil. I think I'll leave it with that. I have about 22 seconds, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell. The next commenter we have is Jane Velez Mitchell, followed by Karen LaCava. Jane, you should be able to unmute yourself at this point.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You have the floor.
Yes, okay. My name is Jane Velez Mitchell. I'm a journalist and author, and I live near the Biona wetlands. I'm taking time off from work to speak because this is such a crucial issue near and dear to my heart and to the hearts and minds of thousands of people in Playa, in Marina del Rey, in Santa Monica, California. We do not want this phony restoration. The word is out. It's a scam. And it's all designed so that SoCalGas can upgrade its crumbling gas storage facility deep under the wetlands. You can almost hear the conversation. Well, it's an ecological reserve. We can't just go down there and fix the pipes. Well, what if we called it a restoration? And then we got California Department of Fish and Wildlife. You know, fish and game, they'll go for it. And then we can just bulldoze the whole thing and upgrade our crumbling pipes. And, you know, well, so what if it costs $300 million and we bulldoze LA's last coastal wetlands for 10 years, releasing untold amounts of carbon? We don't care. All we care about is upgrading our crumbling gas storage facility so we can keep the fossil fuel industry going. The word's out. Okay, the gig is up. Thousands of people in our neighborhood have said, no way. And we are drawing a line in the sand. And guess what? A judge agreed with us. Judge Chalfant, in a 67-page ruling, invalidated the environmental impact report, saying that A, it doesn't account for wildlife. As has been mentioned, 1,700 species, including threatened and endangered species, call the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve home, and they have nowhere else to go. I have attended dozens of these hearings. The only people who have ever spoken up in favor of this scam restoration are people being paid or from fake environmental groups that are getting money from the gas company. And they say, well, when asked, where would the wildlife go? Across the street. Where? To the Home Depot parking lot? This is madness. We are in the sixth mass extinction. We are California. We're supposed to be on the forefront of environmentalism, and we're going to destroy LA's last coastal wetlands. There's a reason why the Army Corps of Engineers hasn't given it a stamp of approval, because they've made errors in the flood calculations. In an area that's densely populated, this could be a catastrophe with rising sea levels. This is an insane plan, and they've tried to keep it quiet. 90% of the people didn't even know that there's a giant gas storage facility deep under the wetlands until people started protesting against this. So please listen to the people. The people have risen up and said, no, we do not want this fake restoration. It doesn't even make sense on the face of it. Oh, we're going to put in bike paths. There are already bike paths. We're going to put in walking trails. There are already walking trails. You can't bike enough. I have a bike. I can't bike the trails that exist right now. And you're going to destroy the wetlands and bulldoze for 10 years in a densely populated area? It does not pass the smell test. It does not pass the logic test. And please do not use this event, this hearing, as an excuse to push it forward. They are relentless. Even though the judge invalidated the environmental impact report, they're trying to piecemeal it. Every time I walk by there, they've got stuff set up where they're continuing to destroy this one last piece. They've taken all the rest of it. Playa Vista, that used to be wetlands. And I'm a journalist. I covered it years ago. And the people who were the developers behind Playa del Rey said, Playa Vista, they said, don't worry, there'll always be this area for the wildlife. Now they want to take that tiny little area away, and we, the people, are saying no way.
Thank you, Jane. That is time.
The next speaker we have is Karen LaCava.
Hi, folks. Thank you for hearing our voices. I am a resident of Venice, and I'm on the board of directors of the Venice Chamber of Commerce and the Venice Art Crawl, although I am speaking as a private citizen. Everything that Jane has said, I am going to agree with. That's why I'm here. The restoration really is destruction, not restoration. You know, we look at what's happening right now with the fires, you know, in Malibu, 4,000 acres, right? People talk about the loss of lives. There are none, right? No, there are thousands of animals who have lost their lives there. We don't think about the animals. This is the last wetland we have in Los Angeles. We need to protect them. We need to not go to the side of the gas company. They're doing everything they can to destroy this one last piece of nature along the coast in Los Angeles. And, you know, we do not want another Aliso Viejo situation here. I just want to say that you guys really need to think about nature, because we're going to lose this planet if we don't do something, along with just these animals that, you know, we care about. You know, it's just a shame. Anyway, please do not back the gas companies' proposals to, quote unquote, restore, really destroy these wetlands. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. The last request we have was to read public comments into the record by Walter Lamb. So I'll go ahead and start those comments. Thanks, Luke. The Bayona Wetlands Land Trust appreciates the opportunity to submit written comments that can hopefully be read into the record at the Santa Monica Bay Commission's meeting on December 12, 2024. This Sunday marks the 30th year anniversary of our incorporation as a nonprofit entity advocating for the Bayona Wetlands, and we are proud of our work over the last three decades. Today's comments focus on the role of this commission in monitoring and coordinating progress towards compliance with total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, that were established for the Bayona Wetlands by the United States Environmental Protection Agency in 2012. These TMDLs set targets for legacy sediment and exotic invasive vegetation in the wetlands. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has proposed to achieve TMDL compliance by implementing the Bayona Wetlands Restoration Project. However, staff at the Los Angeles Regional Water Board informed their board members in September that the restoration project is on hold with no current timeline for moving forward due to a lack of funding. Had this updated information been shared at the October 10th meeting of this commission, the representative from Heal the Bay could have avoided citing an outdated timeline on the department's website in comments to the regional board at their October 24th meeting. Heal the Bay, Los Angeles Waterkeeper, US EPA, the Los Angeles Regional Water Board, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Los Angeles County Flood Control District, the State Coastal Conservancy, and the Bay Foundation all have a direct, past, or current connection to the Bayona Wetlands TMDLs. The Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission itself is listed in the TMDL as being a member of the Bayona Wetland Restoration Project Management Team. The Commission's Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan includes actions relating to the restoration of the Bayona Wetlands and also the furtherance of regional TMDLs. The Commission also has a statutory mandate to monitor, assess, coordinate, and advise on projects that affect the Santa Monica Bay and its watershed. For all of the above reasons, the Land Trust respectfully requests that a standing agenda item be created for future meetings of the Commission's Governing Board in order to facilitate a better exchange of information between member entities regarding the status of the Bayona Wetlands TMDL. Thank you for your consideration of these comments. That'll conclude Walter Lamb's comments, and I do not see any other requests to comment under item one.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to item 2A. Order the agenda. Staff does not propose any changes. Are there any changes proposed by committee? Seeing none, we'll move to 2B.
Mr. Chair, Dean over here. Hi.
Oh, hi, Dean.
I just wanted, I don't really have a change of the order of agenda, but there was a comment made that the wetlands is not in the agenda. But just to clarify, it is 2E information item on our Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, and they were referring to the references of Bayona Wetlands on that. And as I understand, this plan will be under consideration for updating next year. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Let me confirm that item 2E is discussion from members about implementation of the Comprehensive Management Plan. It is not a discussion on the Comprehensive Management Plan in and of itself.
Right, but that will be coming up next year then, I assume. Is that
so
right?
We will be considering it over the next, I think it's year and a half or so.
Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Report from the chair. At the executive committee meeting on November 21st, we received updates from commission staff. We discussed approaches to how we're going to update the comprehensive management plan, which we were just discussing, and we established the agenda for this meeting. The next executive committee meeting will be on the executive committee also approved its meeting dates for 2025, but we're also looking at a request from one of the executive committee members about changing the time for those meetings, and so we'll be reporting back to the executive committee with the results of that, looking into that the next meeting. And now I would like to turn it over to Dan for a report from the technical advisory committee. Excuse me, David.
Hi, John.
Dan, where are you?
Sorry, Dan. Dan couldn't make it, so Vice Chair Eric Stein will be giving the update.
Thank you. Yeah, Dan had a last minute
issue. We had to get out into the field. So I'm Eric Stein, Vice Chair of the Technical Advisory Committee. So I'll be giving the report on behalf of Dan Pondella and the rest of the Technical Advisory Committee. So I have six items to report on. And the first one that we discussed at our recent TAC meeting last week was that the Palos Verdes Reef has met all of its performance standards after 3 years, and the fourth year of monitoring is complete. This reefing project has been used by the Department of Fish and Wildlife as part of the new California Artificial Reef Program, the CARP program, which just got funded by the Ocean Protection Council. And it's another, just an example of how the Santa Monica Bay work is being used to inform and assist programs around the state. We also talked about the fact that while there's been an active slide at the Portuguese Bend and Abalone Cove, the slide is not moving into the water at this time. And however, at the toe of the slide, there's been some uplift exposing a long buried reef, some of which now may be intertidal habitat in Portuguese Bend and may become an issue, an area that we can roll into some of the existing monitoring. The marine protected area monitoring has been completed for the year, and the South Coast MPAs led by those in Santa Monica Bay are showing tremendous response to the 2012 protection. And so that information is being worked up now, but the result monitoring results look great. The TAC spent some time discussing and the concerns over the frequency and persistence of red tides in the bay. It's not a localized problem. The harmful algal blooms are appearing to cause deleterious effects to various habitats in the bay. And the HABs did delay the opening of the lobster season for the commercial fishers. So that's something that when we look at sort of updates to the comprehensive monitoring plan, that's an area that we'll spend more attention thinking about. The TAC also discussed the progress on the State of the Bay report, which we're working on, and those chapters will be coming out in a rolling fashion. The first chapter that will be coming out is the coastal wetlands chapter about a year from now. And the goal is to have a storyboard portal for the public outreach. So we're working on the format of the report from both the technical report perspective, as well as the public facing portal to sort of tell the story of what we're learning through the State of the Bay report. The Prop 50 projects are all underway. Both the Rocky Reef and the wetlands project have finished their proposed field work and are moving forward with data analysis and reporting. And with that, that concludes our report from the Technical Advisory Committee.
Any questions for Eric? Seeing none, we'll move on to a report from the director of the NEP.
Thank you, Jonathan. Just 1 second, I got to catch up with my notes. All right. First off, I'd like to report that we had a very successful year in clearing more acres of urchin barren, restoring those kelp forests this year than we've had since the pandemic. So we did a little over 9 acres worth of work this year, much of that credit due to our new scientific volunteer diving program that we instituted, which was a way to get some more folks out there on the water, experience the work that we're doing, see what's going on. And we're working up our annual report at this point in time. Once that's approved and vetted, we'll make some changes to that and get it up onto the website for everybody to read. We have a whole new cohort of endangered white abalone in our mariculture facility down at Southern California Marine Institute. They were all raised up in Northern California before being loaded into a plane and flown down here. And now we are converting them to local diet, local water, to acclimate them to this environment before we put them out onto the reef. We'll assist them in acclimating once we go back out there as well. So it's a multi-stage process to get them going, but it's very nice to have several thousand abalone back here in Southern California and soon to be out into the wild. we also have had multiple events with the Environmental Charter School System. Many of you around the table are familiar with that group and our work with them on composting, greening up their campuses, finding opportunities for those students to gain better awareness of the application of environmental work in and around their communities. It's just been a very pleasant fall working with them
and seeing the progress of their gardens and their wild spaces. Always sitting here in the marina, it's hard to ignore the boats all around us. So we've continued to innovate and try to advance our work to aid the boating community in tools, understanding, and aiding in green boating practices. This certainly was an effort that was focused here in Santa Monica Bay, but we work and coordinate with folks now statewide on this effort as well as nationally. If you do follow us on Instagram, when we send you the post about composting marine toilets, check it out. There's some interesting stuff going on there that we're excited about. As for the work that we've been engaged with along the beaches of LA County for a while now with establishing vegetated sand dunes, we're gearing up for the busy season for that. So we're already starting seeding and planting. We've got teams working today with community members up in Santa Monica on the state beach there. And over the next many months, we'll have plenty of community-based events to get folks out there with us, working side by side to help us weed, seed, plant, and maintain those dunes so that they can continue to flourish and protect our coastline from coastal erosion, sea level rise, and some coastal flooding. We mentioned last meeting that we met here that we were on the agenda for the State Coastal Commission, State Coastal Conservancy for funding for a suite of projects that would help advance the goals of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan. And I can say, happy to say that that went through that meeting. So now we're working on contracting and the other pieces to get that work started. That's what I've got for you today.
Any questions from members for Tom? Yes, sir.
What is the disposition of the sea urchins that you're removing? How do you get rid of them?
Yeah, Rory, do we eat them? Where do we put them? The current phase of this project, which has been ongoing for now close to 11 years, is we are crushing them in situ in the ocean. A number of folks opining on this were like, hey, let's keep that calcium carbonate in the ocean. That is their skeleton and their spines. The little bit of biomass that these animals do contain moves right out into the environment, and it's a big fish-feeding, octopus-grabbing party for what's inside those tests when we crack them open. To date, it's been a little over 5 million sea urchins that we've moved out of the way, and a little over 70 acres now of kelp forest that has proven to be resilient in many of these spaces over the past 10 years.
Any other questions for Tom? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 2E, which is report from members on implementation actions of the CCMP.
Chair, I just wanted to note that we do have 3 requests for public comment on this item, as well as member Erica Yelensky of USEPA joined us remotely.
Okay. So do I have any reports from members before we move to public comment? Yes, Martha.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I wanted to report on Action 21, which involves maximizing recycling in our region, the Pure Water Southern California Project, which is a partnership between the Metropolitan Water District and the Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts to take water that's currently going to the ocean, purify it, and use it for groundwater recharge. In November, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation announced award of $26 million to this project. So we're very excited. We're currently in the environmental phase. This money will be used for planning work. So the project cost, though, is over $6 billion. So we still have a ways to go in terms of funding. But, you know, we're excited about this additional source. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. In the context of our preservation of the bay and the Santa Monica Mountains, the supervisor wanted me to share an update about the response happening this week with the Franklin fire that's going on in Malibu, and to express our deep gratitude for all of our partners in local and state government who are working hard to defend our beautiful Santa Monica Mountains and wildlands and, of course, property and people. There's close to 2,000 personnel who are working around the clock to respond to the fire. That is now just over 4,000 acres that have been burned in and around Malibu and the Santa Monica Mountains, and we're still just at about 7% containment. So there's still a lot of work left to do, but we're hopeful for weather conditions becoming more favorable to see a change there. And just to share that the city of Malibu has set up emergency information and supplies at Zuma Beach, and there are shelters that are in place in Santa Monica. There are still mandatory evacuation orders in place and repopulation of limited areas, though, are expected to be announced today. And just that for those of you in the room, for those listening in, for your stakeholders, supervisors, if you want to sign up for Lindsay Horvath's updates, their newsletter, sending out many a day with updates, as well as our local partners, and our office is standing ready to work with anybody if you have any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other reports from members? Seeing none, we'll move to public comment.
Oh, can I share? Sorry. Online?
Oh, yes.
Sorry. Good morning, everyone, and apologies for joining late. And online. I'm up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I just wanted to share. So this morning, our Superfund office is hosting the fish contamination, the Palos Verdes Shelf Superfund fish contamination, and I think it's Education Collaborative meeting. I think they meet about twice a year. So unfortunately, the meeting is overlapping with this one, but I'm just hoping to share an update from that at our next governing board meeting. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Sorry, I forgot that you were waiting to speak.
That's okay.
Caitlin, we have public comment?
Yes. The first public comment we have is Helen Coyne Coral. Apologies if I mispronounced your name, followed by Marsha Hanscom. Helen, you should now be able to unmute yourself.
Okay, I'm unmuted, right?
Yes, we can hear you. You have the floor.
Oh, okay. I would like to see item 13 removed from the plan due to the public's concern and the many previously stated reasons. But we do not want another Porter Ranch, Aliso Canyon blowout here, as happened in that Northwest San Fernando Valley location. This is close to the airport. There are many, many residences above the wetlands in what I call Upper Playa del Rey. My daughter has a condo there, and the airport has expressed concerns about what could happen. I think it's time for SoCalGas to get out of here, especially when their motivation is merely to store that gas so that they can equalize costs during the year. People are just going to have to pay more. That's not a big deal, I don't think, in terms of where we're going with climate change, and hopefully we get rid of that soon with all the fossil fuels. There are schools up on the top of that bluff also. And, it just isn't what we want to do. I think SoCal Gas has been a prime mover of this from an early time. They understand they want to update their equipment and have it go for another, 20, 40 years? But this is not reasonable for the people who live in the area. And we need to have that stop. So, and in terms of the wetlands restoration, this plan, as I view it and as the court views it, is not a restoration. I've heard experts speak, and they say do as little as possible. Here we're talking about bulldozers for a decade, perhaps, and very intense disruption of the wetlands. So thank you very much for listening, and I'd like to see this project massively changed to be merely a minor restoration. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next speaker we have is Marsha Hanscom, followed by Suzanne Cumming.
Honorable Commission Board members, Marsha Hanscom with the Coastal Lands Action Network and Defend Biona Wetlands. I want to tell you about something that happened earlier this week, in case you didn't read about it. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has suggested that the monarch butterfly be put on the endangered species list, and that critical habitat along our coast be designated for that. We have an autumnal and a wintering population of the monarch butterfly at the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. If the planned project proceeds, that population will be gone. I know the Fish and Wildlife Department says it won't, but when you put salt water into an area where you've got trees that are a grove that do not rely on salt water and they would die in salt water, you won't have the grove anymore that welcomes those butterflies back. We also have the burrowing owl, which the Fish and Game Commission last month determined should be put on the state endangered species list. We have a wintering population of the burrowing owl. We had 5 of them last year, right at the very spot where Delray 9, one of the big gas rigs, has been operating at night with lights, disturbing that habitat. But for some reason, the Fish and Wildlife Department has allowed these big rigs to be put up there to quote, move the gas wells over to the side to have slant drilling. They're not getting rid of the gas storage facility. They're just going to have different wells slant drilled into the project site. Did you know that? Did anybody here read the EIR? We read it, and it shows that there are 18 wells that the gas company is going to and they're actually doing it right now, even though there's an injunction on the property. So we've filed a lawsuit against the Coastal Commission for approving these wells, these big rigs out there that would, quote, destroy habitat for endangered species and destroy wetlands, which the Coastal Act and the Coastal Commission never does. So obviously, SoCalGas is very influential. They are working in the background. A lot of people working on the restoration don't realize that SoCalGas is part of it, but they've been part of it since the beginning. And if you read the EIR, you will see the very important things that the gas company is doing in order to stay longer. SoCalGas does not want the fossil gas that they import from other areas where they frack it. They send it in by pipeline. They put it under very high pressure underneath the wetlands. Ecological reserve, the only state ecological reserve in all of LA County. And they want to keep using this fossil gas because I guess their CEOs want to keep getting their multi-million dollar bonuses every year. Even though we're supposed to be getting off of fossil gas, methane is one of the biggest contributors to climate change. So it's all connected. And there are, besides these two endangered species candidates that we now have, we have 7 endangered species that rely on Biona right now. And you can't just come in for 9 years and bulldoze the entire place and start over and think that those species are going to be able to survive. We want to suggest that we focus on recovery, work with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that works on recovery of endangered species, and not, quote, restoration, because it's become something else. Thank you very much. Please remove 13 from that plan before you ever approve it again.
That's time, Marcia.
The next speaker we have is Suzanne Cumming.
I'm Suzanne Cumming. I'm a lawyer and a member of Sierra Club, longtime resident of Marina Del Rey. I really hope that you take down this Action 13 Restore Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. It's so outdated. I'm just going to name 3 reasons. Everybody loves 007, the trash and the collector. The beaches have been so much cleaner. It's just been a huge success. But this plan involves taking down these concrete levees. The inceptor works in between these concrete levees that channel the water. If the concrete levees are gone underneath this plan, I don't think that 007 will work. We went to the 007 presentation meeting and we asked these questions, and They really couldn't give an answer. They didn't want to give an answer. But if you don't have the trash collector, if the levees are down, do we have a result, trash floating all around the wetlands, sinking into the wetland soil? Nobody wants that. The second reason is the court struck down the EIR. To look at the plan the way it is, you know, it's invalidated. No one should be looking at it anymore. Number three, it's just the baseline is 12 years old. There was a baseline monitoring, extensive baseline monitoring that was done in 2012. Well, and if you go there now, you see a completely different place. You see monarch butterflies. You see the owls. You see all kinds of different wildlife. If anything needs, if a new plan is done, it has to be based on a current baseline of actually taking note of what is there now. So for those, just three of the many reasons that this number 13 should be taken off, not approved, just put aside until a new update is done. Please take it off your plan and just, you know, suspend it for now and take it up after a new update is done. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comment?
No, that concludes comments.
I would like to let all the folks know that I'm going to direct staff to keep track of this comment. We are going to be having a review of the CCMP over the next year, and that concerns over item 13 should be included in that review.
Apologies. Can I interrupt? I'm so sorry. There's something with the microphones. I don't know how to contact AGP, but something changed and now there's a crackling sound. So I'm also worried about the recording of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Do we need to take a break Okay. Great. Then I'd like to move on to
Mr. Chairman. Dean Francois here.
Yeah, Dean.
Thank you. You know, we received a lot of public comment about item 13. That's one item in the CCMP that appears to be outdated from what's going on now. And I sympathize with those that are pushing for a gentle restoration and doing something in the meantime until anything ever, if it may ever get restored in the future. So this hasn't been updated since 2018, but as I understand, we did update the strategic work plan, and we included gentle restorations in that. So is there some way we can take the work plans that were updated and somehow, I know this CCMP is a major document with a lot of things in it, but is there some way we can spearhead those work plans to at least get them more consistent with what we're doing here with the CCMP? I mean, it is kind of strange that on this item 13, it is outdated from what's currently happening and what may or may not happen in the future with Bayona. So what time frames are we working on, and how is that going to work out as far as getting this thing updated and or addressing this specific item 13 and others on the plan?
Yeah, so we are in the process of starting the review and update of the CCMP. It's a long-term document, so we don't review it every year. We do it every 5 to 10 years, and so we are in that process, and this is be part of that update.
So what do we look in 2025, for example? We have 6 meetings of this board, 6 meetings of the executive committee. What will we look forward to next year in the progress?
So I'll have to get back to you, because we did talk at the executive committee that the next executive committee will get a timeline on the review. So I don't have that for you today. So I can't give you that update today, but we have asked that that be a discussion item at the next executive committee meeting so we can set lay out the timeline for both the CCMP update and then the work plan updates that are going to go on in between, because we do those annually at this point, and then they reflect the current CCMP. So we need to update the CCMP as part of that.
Okay. Thank you. And in the meantime, I've been working with the chair and a few others on the commission to come up with a revised or a draft resolution regarding this issue that can maybe spearhead and hopefully move towards more immediate things that can be done in the wetlands. And if anyone wants to join me, feel free to contact me, but we're working on that for coming up in the January XCOM, and if it gets approved, then it would be here in February. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I would be curious to see who you're working with, since any kind of work in the ecological reserve would require coordination with us. I haven't heard any of this before. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, we discussed at the last few XCOMS meetings, and Phil Brock, who is with us, is I worked with him and Jonathan on this, and we'll be discussing at the executive committee meeting. But if you want to participate before then, you know, we can work on something.
Yeah. So we've had a request from a member, and this happens infrequently, but we do, to propose a resolution. So we've been working on a resolution. We will send that resolution to you so that you're.
Thank you.
Okay. Ready to move on to approval of the October 10th meetings. There are no changes proposed by staff. Are there any changes proposed by commission members? Seeing none, I would look for a motion. And
second.
A second?
Second.
Okay. Caitlin.
Yes, I will call the roll alphabetical order by last name for approval of the October meeting minutes. Sabrina Ashtian.
Approve. Yes.
Jonathan Bishop.
Aye.
Jacob Berman.
Yes.
Megan Edick.
Yes.
Dean Francois.
Yes.
Annalisa Moe.
Abstain.
Dan Murphy.
Yes.
Jenny Newman.
Yes.
Warren Ontiveros.
Yes.
Aaron Ordower.
Aye.
Genevieve Osmena.
Yes.
Dave Pedersen.
Yes.
Michael Quill.
Yes.
Greg Rachel.
Yes.
Lauren Salisbury.
Abstain.
Rory Skay.
Yes.
Clark Stevens.
Yes.
Martha Tremblay.
Yes.
And Aaron Wilson.
Yes.
The October minutes are approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. All right, we'll move on to item 3B, which is consideration approval of the 2025 governing board calendar. I think a version of that calendar was sent to you, but there is one proposed change that staff would like to make to move the February 20th meeting to February 21st because of a conflict essentially with me. And I would like to be there for the election of our new chair. I'd like everyone to be thinking about who would like to be considered for nomination of that. Caitlin, is there anything else I need to?
I'm screen sharing the meeting dates now. So, AGP, could you make the document that I'm screen sharing larger for the folks in person? Thank you so much. So our The past governing board pattern has been to meet on the third Thursday of odd-numbered months. So we are still meeting, or I'm sorry, even-numbered months. We're still meeting on even-numbered months, but we have a couple changes. So February, as the chair mentioned, February 20th, we're proposing for Friday the 21st, and we're still working on confirming a venue. Apologies for that last-minute change. And then a couple other notes to make for June 12th. It's the second Thursday of the month, and December 11th is the second Thursday, and that's in order to accommodate holidays. And we propose to continue meeting 9:30 to 12.
So is there any discussion? Yes, Dean.
Is there any possibility we could move it to Wednesday instead of the Friday? Because, I teach handicap skiing every third weekend in the month, of the year, in the winter. So that's all. It's up.
Yeah, well, it is not possible for me, but if folks are not able to make the Friday, then I guess I can have an alternate attend for the Thursday. But
if you want to make it that Friday, I guess we have online ability to Zoom in, right?
Eric?
That's correct. Yeah, you can join via Zoom.
Does it have to be agendized and all that, or you just log in on regular Zoom? Are there any special rules about location and all that?
There are some rules about quorum, but we would have to sort that out, make sure we have a quorum of members. But beyond that, no other rules.
Okay.
Any other discussion? I apologize for the last minute request. Do I have a motion then for the amended?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Sorry, can we clarify that it's a motion to adopt with the amendment to February 21st?
Yes.
Thank you.
Apologies. Who made the motion? Oh, thank you, Martha. And the second?
Murphy.
Thank you.
If you could do a roll call.
Yes. Okay, approving the 2025 meeting calendar as revised. Sabrina Ashtian?
Yes.
Jonathan Bishop?
Aye.
Jacob Berman?
Yes.
Megan Edick?
Yes.
Dean Francois?
Yes.
Annalisa Moe?
Yes.
Dan Murphy?
Yes.
Jenny Newman?
Yes.
Warren Ontiveros?
Yes.
Aaron Ordower?
Yes.
Genevieve Osmena?
Yes.
David Pedersen?
Yes.
Michael Quell?
Yes.
Greg Rachel?
Yes.
Lauren Salisbury?
Yes.
Rory Skay?
Yes.
Clark Stevens?
Yes.
Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
And Aaron Wilson?
Yes.
The meeting dates are approved. Thank you. We'll be sending out calendar holds as part of the meeting follow-ups.
Thank you very much, Caitlin. And I really appreciate everyone's flexibility. That's done with the official business. We are moving on to informational items. And the first informational item is on the Topanga Lagoon Restoration Project. Caitlin, will you introduce this item?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Give me one moment. Okay, so restoration of Topanga Lagoon is Action 12 of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, and our executive committee identified wetlands restoration as a priority topic for informational items this year. So California State Parks, Caltrans, County of LA, Department of Beaches and Harbors, and the Resource Conservation District of Santa Monica Mountains are working to restore the Topanga Lagoon, one of the last coastal wetlands in Southern California. The overarching goals of the restoration are to expand and restore the lagoon ecosystem, address public access, recreation, and visitor needs, improve resilience to sea level rise, and protect existing biological, cultural, and recreational resources. The project recently reached a major milestone this fall with the certification of the Environmental Impact Report in September. So now I'll turn it over to Rosie Daggett, Principal Conservation Biologist at RCD and a member of our Technical Advisory Committee. Give me one moment to share your slides, Rosie.
Good morning, everyone. While Caitlin's getting up the slides, I just want to reiterate, it's a real pleasure to come back to share with you where we are on the in the process on Topanga Lagoon. As you many of you know, this has been a very long process, which we started in 2000. So it's kind of interesting that we're at year 25 looming right ahead of us to keep this moving. Caitlin mentioned all the partners. We have three landowners at Topanga Lagoon, and I'm here to kind of give you the update, but we very much appreciate all of our partners and how much they're working very closely together to pull this off, because it's a big project. Next, please. I'd like to start with the official land acknowledgement that we have developed for the Topanga Lagoon project. We recognize and acknowledge the First Peoples of this ancestral and unceded territory of the community of Topanga, where the water meets the rock, now occupied by Topanga State Park, Pacific Coast Highway, and Topanga Beach. We honor the elders of the Tongvanar communities, past and present, and their descendants who are members, citizens of the Gaborone Indians of California, the San Gabriel Band of Mission Indians, and the Fernandinho Tatavium Band of Mission Indians. We recognize that these tribes are still here, and we are committed to preserving their heritage, respecting their traditional knowledge, and lifting up their culture and community. And I'd like to say that we've really benefited from having a very active participation with members of the tribal communities who have participated and guided us in a number of really foundational and excellent ways. So trying to integrate the traditional knowledge practices has become really a big part of the restoration effort. So for those of you who don't know, a quick reminder, Topanga is the third largest watershed that drains into the Santa Monica Bay. It's the least altered watershed with over two-thirds of ownership in public hands. And it's the last creek that we have that doesn't have any inputs or removals of any substance. And we still have present all of the creatures that were supposed to be in all of our creeks, but now are only in Topanga, with the exception of the red-legged frogs. And the one other thing that's important is that the only invasive aquatic species that we have are red swamp crayfish. So we've kind of dodged the bullet on some of the other issues that are affecting other local creeks. Next, please. So the project includes about a 91-acre area. And the reason we've done that is because we want to make sure that the upland connectivity to the wetlands and the areas that will hopefully eventually adapt as they need to sea level rise have enough space to do that. So if you look at the slide, you can see that the blue area is all state parks. The pink area is the County of Los Angeles. Pacific Coast Highway and Topanga Canyon Boulevard are both Caltrans. And then out in the ocean, that sort of hat sort of issue is where we have been working with the Dredge Management Committee to use the native historic materials that create the berms and the mesas around the currently constrained Topanga Lagoon. That's all native material that was taken and cut from the highway. So we are hoping to put that back into the system so that it can move down coast and re-nourish the beaches that are down coast of our area. And the one little neck of the goose that's about half a mile up Topanga Canyon Boulevard is where the advanced wastewater management system will be located to support the project. Next. So I'm not going to go through a quick background other than to say that we've been working on this for a long time, but our milestones, legal milestones, were that we issued the notice of preparation in 2022. The draft EIR was published in February of this year. We had two very largely and well-attended public meetings that were hybrid, and we had a 60-day comment period because it was a big document with a lot to look at. And the there was a follow-up presentation after all the comments were received to share the comments and responses with the public, and the certification of the FEIR occurred in September. So I'm going to go really fast through this, Caitlin. So the purpose and needs, you all pretty much know. If you go to the next slide, this is what Topanga looked like in around 1910. And what's really interesting is that it was approximately 30 acres in area, which is much larger than what Malibu Lagoon is today, just as a point of comparison. Next, please. In the 1930s, what happened was that along with all the other flood control projects that were happening, it was decided to move Pacific Coast Highway, what became Pacific Coast Highway, what was originally called the Roosevelt Highway, inland. You can see the original alignment to the south of the existing alignment that you see in this image. And you can see all the cuts on the hill slopes nearby, which was the source material for all the fill to put that in. And the original 1926 bridge of the Roosevelt Highway was over 250 feet long. And when they did the renovation in the 30s, they created a 79-foot box culvert bridge. And that's what we're dealing with today. Next, please. So Topanga is the last place that is with reproducing and really stable populations of tidewater goby and steelhead trout, both federally listed endangered species, and California listed recently, last April, for southern steelhead. So the good news is that these populations are doing great, as we have. So therefore, all of our restrictions on the development are that nothing will touch the existing wetted areas. So all of the work that you're going to see that I talk about pretty much goes from the banks outward, and with the idea being that don't break what's working and let the creek manage and readjust and change as it needs to over time and without us directing it in any one way, just giving it freedom space to do that. Next, please. Topanga also is a very significant tribal location. There are all kinds of cultural, paleontological, and historic resources here. So, you know, the project was really trying to balance the need to get as much restoration as we could, but still recognize and preserve these other important elements. Next, please. The Topanga Ranch Motel was eligible for the National Register of Historic Places, and State Park still hasn't really come up with a plan for what they're going to do with this. We actually just are waiting for economic feasibility studies to help guide State Park's decision-making, but there is going to be a role for the Ranch Motel in the future. Next, please. And last but definitely not least is the recreational and coastal needs. Topanga is a really popular beach, and if you go there on pretty much any weekend, the parking is full and people are just all over the beach. So making sure that we create and maintain as much towel space as we can and make the accessibility of the beach and those recreational resources more connected right now, it's a little kludgy. So we're working on that. Next. And last but not least, this was a really important part of what we're seeing with the Franklin Fire right now, is that Topanga is a major intersection that's used to manage traffic and access to Malibu. It's a really important evacuation point. It's a very important location for transporting medically injured people along PCH. So all of those elements right now are kind of hither and yon. And the goal was to try to put together a comprehensive plan. So we really want to acknowledge and thank the lifeguards, as well as the fire department, LA County Fire, LA County Sheriffs, and CHP, who all gave us guidance and direction on where we should go and how we should do things to make it better. Next, please. And coastal erosion is real. It's happening now. And we need to do something to protect the existing resources and keep the beach going. Next. So keep going. Caitlin already read the project goals, so I won't reread them to you. Next slide, please. But I do want to point out that we had a long list of goals here. And when we were going through the environmental review process, we did a very thoughtful and considered look at whether or not we were actually going to achieve and meet these goals that we were identifying. What's on this slide are the goals that are more ecologically oriented. Next slide, please. But that's not the only piece here. It's already got these other pieces of recreation, access, emergency. So all of them had to fit together. Next. So just a quick refresher. Next, please. The alternatives we considered were no project. Next. Maximizing lagoon restoration, which would include removal of the ranch motel and all of the film material under it. Next. Maximizing the historic, which would mean keeping all of the ranch motel and reducing the size of the lagoon on the eastern side of the creek. And next. And the last alternative was alternative 4, which if you look, you can see that we proposed moving the alignment of PCH further north to create more coastal zone and beach access. Next slide. So we looked at all of the impacts to these, and all of them, any of them would, of course, have temporary impacts due to construction. But what we learned is that alternative 2, which removed all of the historic ranch motel, that was considered to have a significant and unavoidable impact because of its role as a historic structure. And alternative 4 would potentially impact significant archaeological resources. So from the environmentally superior alternative point of view, alternative 3 avoided both of those. And so that's what was listed in the DEIR. Next, please. We had a lot of public comments and some very thoughtful input and guidance from a lot of members of the public, as well as a lot of federal, state, and local agencies. Next. And what was really impressive was that we got very little comment that this, I don't think there was only one comment that suggested we go with alternative 1, no project. Everyone agreed that something needs to be done there. They don't all agree on what, but they agree that something needs to happen. And so the maximum lagoon restoration received the most public support, but there was also this interest in making sure that we had the recreational and emergency access available. So next. What ended up happening also is that part of this was looking at how do you support the many numbers of people who use this space, and you have to provide wastewater. So we looked at whether or not we could connect that site to the existing sewer main, which ends about a mile east at where Coastline Drive is, where the Getty is. That's where the end of the public sewer is. And this did not become feasible under any way because of a variety of geotechnical and stabilization issues under PCH. There was no way we could run a pipeline from the Topanga area around that bend to the east. So we came up with this idea of seepage pits with an advanced on-site wastewater treatment plant that will support everything for the state parks north of PCH, and the county's existing advanced wastewater system will be upgraded and managed for there, and that's how we'll handle that. The other thing is that the county preferred alternative two because it got the helipad down at beach level, and there's a little more information about that to come. So next, please. One of the things that actually changed everybody's point of view a little bit, particularly about keeping all of the ranch motel, was that we lost a cabin that fell into the creek because of the erosion of that bank that you see, which is the east side of the creek, the west side of the motel. And it's very unstable. And so that part of moving everything back and away from the creek became even more important. Next. So all of the challenges were looked at, evaluated, and the landowners met two times, really did a very considered and thoughtful look at all of the comments they'd received, all of the information that we had at hand, and decided to put together what's called a hybrid alternative. Next, please. And the hybrid alternative was also augmented by something that's required by Caltrans. So we're talking about the FEIR and all the environmental part, but running in parallel to this is the Caltrans project report process. And that's something that's a very specific, rigid Caltrans type process. And one of the things that they require for any project, such as a bridge, that would be cost more than $25 million is to do, was to figure out, is there any way you could tweak this to do a better job, make it cost effective, and reduce impacts? So three modifications were recommended, and all three of them are now being incorporated into this new hybrid plan. Next, please. So what you can see is that we now have a smaller ranch motel. We have the lagoon on the west side is totally restored to almost its full historic configuration. It's bounded by a slope, a hill, so that's sort of our limit on the west side. On the east side, we get some benefit and movement, creating transitional upland. And in the back, on the north of the that triangle of the ranch motel, it's really, that's our real opportune area, because that's where we're protecting and preserving all the native trees that are currently there, because it doesn't make sense to take out native trees that you then need to replant. So where the grading works around those trees to maintain them. It also protects the cultural resources. But that back area, these are the areas that kind of give us this pressure valve release for the coastal erosion pressure, allowing the movement of the sea in of the creek and the lagoon inward if it needs to and when it needs to, without us forcing it in any direction particularly, just creating some limits. So next, please. This is a drawing that shows the addition of the new bridge confirmation. We were initially looking at doing a temporary bridge because one of the requirements of the project is that there be no closure of any lanes of PCH at any time. Or if there are, it's just you're moving equipment in and moving equipment out. There's no road closures to be allowed. And there's a lot of good reasons for that, as we all know. So what the during the value added, what the engineers figured out is that they could just widen the bridge in one area, just along the bridge deck, and that would allow us to have to maintain two lanes each direction of PCH during the entire construction process. It also knocked between 6 and 8 months off the construction duration. And so both of those were pretty important things to do. So that's where we are on the new configuration. Next, please. So this still gives us some beach expansion, which is a really good thing. We're in the process of looking at how we can get the helipad to meet the setback requirements for both FEMA as well as for the FAA, because right now it's just an ad hoc land on the knoll dirt kind of situation. But when we put in a real helipad, we want it to be, you know, meeting all the regulatory and functional standards we need it to meet. So there will be living shoreline elements that will be incorporated in here. You don't see those reflected yet on those images because we haven't gotten far enough in the design process to have that. So stay tuned. Next, please. One important piece that we haven't really talked about is that State Parks has decided that this is an opportunity to also restore and create what they're calling the Gateway Corner. Because really, when you think about it, as you drive west on PCH from Santa Monica, Topanga is where you really hit the beginning of, you know, the what people think of as the Santa Monica Mountains coastline. And so State Parks is really looking forward to having the opportunity to have this be, you know, really a welcoming and obvious thing. And this will also give us extra parking, which will be done. This portion of the project will be done first so that the parking situation doesn't get dire during construction when they have to take over various parking lots here and there to stage equipment. And this is one of the places where the tribal influence has been really helpful and guidance. And we're looking at integrating some really interesting sort of artistic indigenous elements into the entranceway and incorporating that all, which should be very, very beautiful. I also want to give Clark a shout out because he actually came up with a great idea that during the construction period, one of the big issues is when people are heading west to go to Malibu and the road is PCH is shut down at Topanga, they are now doing three-point turns in the roadway of PCH because that's how you turn around if you've gotten that far and you realize you can't get to where you want to go. And Clark came up with a plan that we will be able to implement that allows the corner of Topanga Canyon Boulevard to become that turnaround so that it's a much safer, much smoother, not people doing crazy three-point turns in the middle of the highway. So thank you, Clark, for that. Next. So the nearshore placement, this was subject to some really intense modeling and effort to make sure that no nearshore essential fish habitats or any kind of sensitive resources along the coastline would be impacted by the placement of the material. The placement would happen over a period of not even a year. It's anticipated it will take between 2 and 5 years for all of it to move, depending on what kind of rainstorms we get. If we get a really dry period, it'll take longer to get everything moving down coast. If we get a wet year, it'll move it faster. So that's in process. Next. We already talked about the seepage pits and their location. This is a really tricky place. I don't know if any of you remember, but this property was owned previously by the Los Angeles Athletic Club. They bought it in the 1920s because they wanted to make a small yacht harbor in what was then the 30-acre Topanga Lagoon. And things happened. The stock market crashed. They never did that. And one of the reasons they were never able to develop, because this area in the 1986 coastal plan was zoned for the level of development that you now see at the corner of Sunset and PCH, where Gladstone's restaurant is. But they couldn't do it because they couldn't figure out a way to get a sewer there. And if those of you who remember back in the day, Malibu incorporated to make sure that there was no sewer connection from Coastline Drive west to Malibu, because they were concerned about the, you know, development that would occur if that happened. So it's a very complex system to make sure you can accommodate the level of visitors that we anticipate we're going to have. Next, thanks. So wrapping this all up, we've finished our environmental review stage. We're now in the design stage. We anticipate having design workshop contracted by tomorrow, actually. And our kickoff meeting with them is on Monday. Moffitt and Nickel Engineers has been helping us with the coastal engineering piece of this and the roadway and bridge piece of it. We anticipate having all the landowners and these design teams put their heads together on Monday to start moving this forward and getting the visitor services in line on temporally with the milestones that we have to meet for the Caltrans process. We anticipate all of that being finished by December of 2026, which is a pretty aggressive thing, and I really can't say enough about how helpful Caltrans has been in terms of moving this along. They have been an outstanding partner on that. And it has been suggested that even though by 2026 we would be ready to go, we'd be ready to list, have a bid package and all of that, that given the state of contracting at that point because of the Olympics, we probably would not go to contract and start implementation until after the Olympics are concluded in 2028. And four-year-ish construction window to get it all done, and then post-construction monitoring next. So we have been incredibly fortunate, thanks to former Assembly Member Richard Bloom, who used to be on this Bay Commission years ago. He was able to get an allocation in the state budget that has provided the funding to get all the bridge, roadway, lagoon excavation, and nearshore placement design planning funded through 90% design. And thanks to a grant from the State Coastal Conservancy that we just got notice to proceed on a week ago after their November 21st board meeting, we now have the funding to keep the visitor services elements in line with that and on track with that. So we still don't have funding to get from 90% to 100%. So we estimate we're going to need probably, can you go to the next slide, probably around $8 to $9 million to do that. And then we have to fund it to actually do the work. So the good news is that this project can qualify for funding from the infrastructure bill. The bad news is that in order to do that, we have to have the project listed on the Caltrans statewide highway operations program. And that has to happen before the June of 2025 application deadline to submit for the last year of the infrastructure bill funding. So we are under a pretty tight timeline to get that dance all done. But the money that you see here, the estimate $173 to $213 million, is actually really conservative and on the high side. And that anticipated the need to, there is going to have to be a land swap because the right of the roadway, right of way for Caltrans and state parks and the county, there has to be some shifts to make that all fit together and work. So we will be hoping that you guys might be willing to give us some letters of support when we go to apply for that grant and get ourselves hopefully situated to cover the bridge costs. The funding for the visitor services, we don't know yet what that will cost because the design effort is just beginning, really, for that. So, and until State Parks really has a clear idea of what they want the ranch motel to be and what its program will be, we don't really have a chance. We don't really know what we're looking at there yet. So, next. If you want to get more information and keep yourselves involved and up to speed on this, we have a website, and you can click on that website and you can sign up and you'll get automatic emails whenever there's anything new and exciting to share. We anticipate having a number of public design charrettes for the visitor services elements as the design proceeds through 30 and 60 and 90%. So we will be engaging the public and the tribal community as we go along. So please feel free to sign in and join up. And last but not least, next, I just want to say thank you and acknowledge our partners in this, our funders in this. This has truly been an effort, a Herculean effort over 25 years by a whole lot of people. And I'm standing here today to kind of give you this update. Jamie King, who has become Clark's alternate on this commission, she is going to be taking over the lead of this project, and I'm transitioning from the lead to the support role for her because it's still going to need a lot of work as we go forward. But thank you so much for the opportunity to give you this update. And last slide. Just any questions, I'm happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rosie. Do we have any questions or comments from commission members?
Well, thank you for that presentation, Rosie, and we're very excited for the vision of this. Topanga State Park is a jewel for the Santa Monica Mountains. The one thing that we did not see in the presentation that I just wanted to address was the businesses that currently exist at the restoration project, including the iconic Real Inn, the Rosenthal Winery, and then an outdoor furniture store that is also there on the corner of where the gateway sign would be. So I was wondering if you could address that in ensuring that our business owners are up to date with the status of this project, because they are heavily affected. And from my understanding, based off the tour that I did, and thank you to Jamie for that tour and Jelly, you have a fantastic staff. My understanding is that Rosenthal, just in every single alternative, it's done. Yeah. The question is on the Real Inn and the other side.
So thank you for bringing that up. When State Parks obtained the property in 2001, all of the businesses became leaseholders on the state. So they're not considered concessionaires because they were grandfathered in, but they have business leases with the state of California's parks. And in that lease, it was very clearly stated that in the event of restoration, the business might be either relocated or moved. So everyone has had, all of those businesses have been operating under that since 2001. So they're very well aware of the implications. They all participated in all of the public meetings that we had so far. They are on our email lists. They get our contacts. Everything in all of these plans, everything except for the building, the location of the Real Inn, will be removed. And the building of Real Inn is owned by the property owner who owns that business. The location is State Parks. And so we still don't have a direction yet from State Parks on how they're going to handle. There will be some restaurant at that location. Whether it will continue to be the Real Inn or be some other thing, I don't have an answer for that at this point in time. My understanding is that whatever is going to happen there at that specific location of the Real Inn, that will include, Mr. Leonard being totally kept in the loop on that, as he has been all along. So, and as someone who really likes to go to the Real Inn, I would be sad to see it go personally, but, we'll have to see how that all shakes out. Yeah.
Any other comments? Yes, Tom.
Rosie, thank you. Long been interested and fascinated by all the great work that you've been doing on this project. A couple quick questions. That eroding bank that you showed, just curious, roughly how tall is that at this point?
30 feet. 30 feet of fill.
And with the narrowing of the restoration potentials at this point, the volume of that material that you're looking to place in that nearshore hat, as you described it?
Yeah, that is being recalculated because they're resurveying. Actually, they've been out there this past week to do the resurvey because now the creek cross section is completely different than what it was when we started. So I don't have a real answer to that yet. Somewhere in the vicinity of probably 200,000 cubic yards. It's a lot of fill.
Cool.
But it would be transported along the beach in a very organized fashion. And so we don't have truck traffic on the roads. And there's a lot of best management practices that will be implemented to make sure that it all goes as we want it to.
Super.
Yeah.
Last quick question. The added width of the bridge, is that a temporary or is that a permanent aspect?
Thank you for bringing that up because I forgot to say that. It is a permanent thing, but it adds now parking. Mm-hmm. So people will be able to park on the bridge on the north side of the bridge in parking spaces. So not just along the shoulder.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Any other comments or questions?
We have Erica. Dean? Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. I assume that the EIR hasn't been finalized yet, correct?
It was finalized in September.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that part is finalized. I guess that's the main question I had on that. Is this an example where you had a draft EIR, came up with alternatives, and actually something that really worked out? Lots of times activists are very frustrated that it's just a rubber stamp and pushes things through. But is your opinion that it really was a good process and it worked out with these alternatives and coming up with the best alternative?
Yeah, I actually think it was a really excellent way of incorporating the public input into the landowners' final decisions on how they wanted to do things. And that's what kind of guided them to do this hybrid so that we kind of touched on all of the things that were important to all of the people who had commented to us.
Right. Okay. Okay. So, thank you very much.
Yeah. You're welcome. Anything else?
Erica.
Erica.
Thank you.
Online.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Rosie, thanks so much for your presentation. It was excellent. I have a follow-up question to Tom's question in terms of the fill material. Do you know how you're going to move it?
Well, right now the plan is that there's a very structured way to move it because we have to build the bridge in order to not touch the wetted area. The bridge has to be built in the existing fill material. That has several advantages because what it does, the most important from my fish perspective, is that there will be no hydroacoustic issues because they'll be doing the pile driving and the foundations for the bridge inside the fill. So it won't be out. We won't hear it as much either, you know, so it's kind of a benefit for everyone during the construction. And then after the bridge is completely built, then each quadrant around the bridge would get excavated in a sequence that goes from north to south on the west side, then north to south on the east side. And that allows us to do all the restoration elements and fine grading along the way, fine tuning it along the way. It also avoids any impact to the wetted area again. So then the material will get trucked in pretty small trucks, actually, along the beach to the eastern edge. There was a real concern about making sure that we didn't place any material at the mouth of the creek. That placement location was very carefully modeled and selected to make sure that we didn't impact the surf break, that we didn't impact the nearshore intertidal zones, that we didn't impact any of the nearshore sandy bottom. And so that location was very carefully thought through and vetted by many. Erica, you were one of them. And so that placement will happen, and the idea is it'll go by pipe out to the deposition zone, which is selected so that as the longshore current moves by, that material gets moved as it goes. So it'll take some time, but it's not like going and dumping a whole lot of stuff in one place and then waiting for things to happen. So it'll be a sequential thing.
Thank you for sharing the additional detail. Appreciate
it.
One more question.
Sorry, I had one more question for you, Rosie.
Yeah.
That picture of the structure that being threatened right along the shoreline, I think if you see it in person, it's pretty significant. When it's high tide, that water is hitting that tower. That's a lifeguard structure, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is kind of the plan in the meantime? Because it's eroding pretty quickly.
So we have the good news on that and the bad news on that. So the good news is that they built that structure with really bomber foundations. So, you know, beaches and harbors and the lifeguards have done a geologic analysis, and they think it can withstand things for a bit more time. The bad news is that it still requires, you know, bringing in sand and rocks to sort of shore that area up on a pretty regular basis. And that's why the Coastal Commission wanted us to do this whole project as an integrated thing, so that, you know, the relocation of that facility inland, so that it gets away from where it's being eroded, is a whole piece of that big puzzle that we're working with. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So just a couple things. Thanks, Rosie. For perspective on all of us who do planning and restoration projects, one is in 2027, which is on our schedule and not that far in advance. It will be 100 years since, in some ways, this project was visualized in the Olmsted Brothers plan as a Topanga lagoon and beach at that point in time, filled partially already and with homes, and it would be purchased for public benefit and public use. So 100 years is a long project timeline, but, you know, for planners, let's just keep that in mind. The second thing is that learning from and looking forward, Rosie mentioned that we were able to keep all of the existing trees. It's interesting to note that initially we were planning additional channels and sort of in that what would be an alluvial area, and they were based on what we saw in the 1920 something aerials, and so the idea was to dig those out and, you know, make berms on the west and north side for that, you know, that sun exposure and plant things, and then we got the tree survey, and when we looked at that, basically just protected all the trees to see what we would get. And we got largely the same pattern that was there in 1927, because what was interesting is everything where the creek had been flowing, even in its flood channel stages, that's where the fill had gone in, and it didn't support native habitat or seedbed. So it was all Arundo, Euphorbia, you know. So what was really interesting, although it's steeper than it would have been, right, in the typical condition, when you just scrape away all the stuff that doesn't belong there and keep all the good stuff, it's pretty much an x-ray of what was there, at least in the 27 stage, not in the 1895 stage. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know if that would happen everywhere if you know, you were so lucky to have this situation, but it was kind of miraculous in a way to see that emerge through that process. So anyway, thanks, Rosie.
Thank you all. I'm going to cut this off unless someone has a burning comment, because we are quite a bit behind. You've already used your 4 minutes, but if you have a quick comment, please. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Where's the helipad going to be located?
The helipad is just there for, so it doesn't have a helicopter station there. The helicopters come and go.
And this interpretive information section, you know, what I'm concerned about is the visual light, and I was wondering if it could be housed, maybe the motel, away from the ocean, away.
Oh, the interpretive stuff is going to, thinking about that.
Now I'm talking about the interpretive.
The interpretive.
Please speak into the mic.
I'm concerned about the interpretive pad, visual blight, you know, along the, I consider visual blight, or maybe other people do, they want to look at the ocean. Where's the interpretive pad going to be, you know? Thank you.
So the interpretation design and that plan is part of the visitor services elements that we're going to be starting next Monday. And so there will be at least two, probably three public meetings. If you would like to come and add your thoughts at that point in time, we'll be soliciting public input and guidance on how to do the interpretation, what people think is important to interpret, and how to do that best. So.
Thank you. We need to move on. Luke, if you could please introduce the next item. I'm sorry, we're running a little bit behind.
Thank you. We will try and go as fast as we can. So I would like to introduce the next informational item, which is regarding LA County Beaches and Harbors Coastal Resiliency Study, or initiative, I'm sorry. LA County Department of Beaches and Harbors manages 18 public beaches along Santa Monica Bay, which are threatened by sea level rise, according to LA County's vulnerability assessment, which was done a few years ago. And in 2023, the Department of Beaches and Harbors completed the LA County Coastal Resiliency Study to build off that study, that previous study. And this resilience initiative addresses, includes multiple strategies for addressing sea level rise over the next 75 years. And this initiative has numerous implications for the CCMP, including action number 6, restoring coastal dunes and habitats, as well as several other actions. So I will hand it over to Warren now to provide the presentation.
Thank you so much, Luke and Chair. Next slide, please. I'll make this very brief. A longer version of this presentation is available on Beaches and Harbors Coastal Resiliency webpage. But I'm summarizing previous meetings that we've had with stakeholders, and very much appreciate this opportunity to present this to you all. And this is also related to an email draft resolution that was sent out on December 5th. So I just wanted to put those two bits of information together that we are seeking this board's support for the initiative, and that resolution would be utilized in the context of future funding requests, both at the state and the federal levels. So just really quickly, I'll do some background information. I'll give an overview of the initiative, provide updates on this project. We have three demonstration living shoreline projects that were identified through our coastal resilience study. So I'll walk you through those, and then I'll give an overview of the next steps and the schedule. Next slide, please. Beach preservation and equity is very important to LA County. LA County is home to many disadvantaged communities, and you can see on the slide we also have statistics on beach visitation. We estimate that 70 million day visits are received by our beaches on an annual basis, which is tremendous. I mean, that's equivalent to almost a visit from everybody in the state of California twice a year. The economic impacts are very positive as well. You know, if we put our beaches up against Disneyland, we're pretty competitive and low cost. So we're very proud of that. And the disadvantaged communities nexus is very important, and that we want to highlight here, as shown in the CalEnviro screen tool that's on the slide. A lot of the disadvantaged communities in the state reside right here in LA County, and beach access is an equity issue. And so we're looking at this coastal resilience initiative as a way to address some of the equity needs of our county. Next slide, please. Beaches and Harbors is very grateful to the leadership of the LA County Board of Supervisors, namely Lindsay Horvath and Supervisor Holly Mitchell, who co-authored a motion that was adopted by the board on November 7th, 2023. This directed our department and Public Works and and the county's sustainability office to develop an outreach and funding strategy for deployment of living shorelines consistent with the 2023 coastal resilience study that our department conducted. We're looking at federal, state, and foundation philanthropic funding targets and to convene a coalition of partners that can help us shape and advance this work. As well as the fundraising strategy, we're tasked with Public Works for a strategy for beneficial reuse of upland sediment from the flood control dams and retention basins, as well as a strategy for beneficial reuse of dredge marina and ocean sediments. And we've reported back on these items as well as staffing and other resources needed to implement the strategies. Next slide, please. So just really briefly, the Coastal Resilience Study was initiated by our department and completed in December 2023. This looked at the vulnerability, the inventory, and came up with a vulnerability ranking of our 18 beaches. And we looked at this through an equity lens. We factored in average daily attendance, parking, and ease of access. So that factored in addition to the erosion, accretion, and projected sea level rise to give us a more balanced picture and in a way to prioritize the projects going forward. And so you'll see in the next slides how we've identified some demonstration pilot project sites to address the most vulnerable beaches first. Next slide, please. This is just a slide showing the decision matrix, which you can also see on our website if you'd care to dig deeper. Next slide, please. So the vulnerability ranking in the top five are Point Dume and Zuma beaches. Malibu Surf Rider is in the top five, but is being worked on by state parks through the Adamson House. Topanga is also a critical place, which is, as we heard, already been being worked on through the partners. Going farther south in the Santa Monica Bay, Dockwater State Beach, because of its extreme popularity and accessibility to the urban core of Los Angeles County, is also a demonstration site. And to the south, Redondo Beach, the Redondo Offshore Canyon, is a sink that swallows up a lot of sediment, and it's a very popular beach. So that's our third of the three pilot demonstration sites. Next slide, please. This slide shows a diagram of three parallel efforts that we're undertaking right now. So the three living shoreline demonstration projects are one of the spheres here. We also have a parallel effort to develop a sand compatibility and opportunistic use program that's lovingly known as SCOOP. It's the state of California's mechanism to pre-permit sand placement. It establishes all the parameters that are needed for grain size and chemical composition of sediment and receiver sites, so that if and when we have offers for sand from construction sites or from other means, we'll have already a recipe to get that placement done. And the third piece of the three parallel efforts is the LA County Regional Shoreline Management Strategy. So we see this as the next step from the Coastal Resilience Study. This management strategy is the vehicle for us to continue engaging and come up with an integrated strategy to increase the resilience across all of our 18 beaches. As we simultaneously move forward with the three demonstration sites, we're looking at the big picture as well. And this would include convening a coalition of all the beach cities, the City of LA, State Parks, Caltrans, all of the players, and that is beginning to move forward, and we'll have some more news on that based on positive action by the Ocean Protection Council earlier this week, where they approved a $1 million grant. So we're very excited to move that process forward as well. Next slide, please. Just really quickly, to give everybody a picture of what we're looking to do primarily at the Malibu, Point Dume, and Zuma, and the Redondo sites, is these projects are to address a deficit of sediment there are some phenomena happening in each site, and we're looking to address that through beach nourishment. So there would be a significant amount of beach nourishment that would occur at Zuma Beach. This is what Point Doom looks like at the moment. Next slide, please. And this is what Point Doom would look like after the sand is renourished at Zuma and naturally drifts south towards the point. This is what we expect Point Doom to look like. It's a much wider beach and gives a lot more towel space, as well as space for living shoreline habitat enhancement, as well as for birds and potentially mammals in the future. Next slide, please. And that's just a conceptual image of what we think the dunes would look like at Point Doom. Next slide, please. This is a really basic outline of what we think the different pieces of the Zuma project and Point Doom project would look like. The nourishment would happen to the left in that red area, and we've identified some spots where we think we can build on the dune restoration projects that have already occurred with our partners, the Bay Foundation, thus far. Next slide, please. This is moving down to Dockweiler State Beach. The photo on the screen is the parking lot that is just down coast from the Dockweiler Youth Center. And there's the county bike path there between the between the parking lot and the beach. And we do have some dunes here already. This project aims to enhance the dunes and to keep more of the sand on the beach, keep it from blowing onto the bike path and into the parking lot. Thankfully, Dockweiler is one of the places in our coast that has a good amount of sand, so we're trying to keep that sand on the beach, keep it from going into the parking lot, keeping it from being a nuisance on the bike path. So what's proposed here is sand fencing, a low barrier wall along the seaward edge of the bike path, and removal of non-native plants, enhancement of the native plant community here. And we expect this would allow the dunes to continue to grow but keep them on the beach. They would potentially grow towards the ocean. And this essentially becomes, as we know, a bank of sand in the event of a big storm or extreme tides and surf. The ocean would hit these dunes and release some sand onto the beach, and it's essentially an investment in the future. Next slide, please. Moving down to Redondo Beach, this is what we call the Pocket Beach. This is between the south end of Redondo City's King Harbor, which is on the left side of the screen. To the right, you see a groin structure that's essentially at Topaz. And this is a place where naturally there's a lot of erosion that happens because of an offshore canyon in the Pacific Ocean, which we call the Redondo Offshore Canyon. That canyon is a sink. It pulls in sediment and causes erosion in this portion of Redondo Beach. This has been a place where it has been nourished in the past through the Army Corps of Engineers and using sediment from Marina Del Rey, just out here. So this is something that we're looking to do on a more regular basis. And so this would, be nourished using those sediments from Marina Del Rey. That would make this beach wider. On the table for the team and the stakeholders to contemplate is a potential hard structure along the bottom of King Harbor. And that would serve multiple purposes. It would potentially help to retain sediment on the beach. But it would aid in the accretion, but it would also stop some of the sediment from drifting into King Harbor, which becomes a nuisance for navigational purposes. And widening the beach here would also allow us, you can see in the to the left upper portion of this image, we're looking to install some dune enhancement here as well. Next slide, please. Schedule-wise, of course, these projects take a long time to plan and implement. We're right now engaged in the early design. We expect to release three project alternatives for each site in the very, very near future. We've been having some regular stakeholder meetings virtual meetings, so we're going to continue doing that. But as in addition to the bigger stakeholder meetings, we do expect to have some technical group discussions as we move forward these designs. So those three alternatives will come out. You can see the project schedules at the top of the screen. At the bottom of the screen is also some dates for the different components. Sand investigation is part of this overall work plan, and we do expect to continue fundraising, of course, for these projects. An early estimate for the three projects was right around 75 to 80 million. That, of course, is expected to increase. So we will be at strategic points, be seeking additional funding as we have more materials to support those requests. One of our upcoming grants we expect to submit for is State of California State Parks Boating and Waterways Grant that we're looking to submit in February 2025. Next slide, please. We encourage folks to get involved and stay involved. We have a dedicated email for this initiative, coastalresilience@bh.lacounty.gov. There's also a webpage, beaches.lacounty.gov/coastalresilience. Materials from our past stakeholder meetings are up online, as well as the recordings from the meetings. The Coastal Resilience Study is also linked there. And very much appreciate this time to present our initiative, and I'm here for any questions.
Do we have any questions from Dean?
Thank you. I'll try to put everything into one question if I can. There's been criticism that we're so involved in trying to bring sand to the beach because it's being washed away, but we're not really addressing what we're doing because the level of the ocean's rising. And, for example, Venice and Hermosa Beach would be the two areas along the bay that homes are right at sea level and there's no elevation. You would think that those would be the highest priority because we have a lot of sand. Sure, the beach is wide, but when the water rises, it's right up to homes and impacted people and properties and everything else. So I was wondering if you could address that a little bit about why there's not a focus on that. And then if the groins all along Redondo, for example, you mentioned, it's my understanding those groins are actually causing erosion. Should we be removing the groins? Because that's interfering with the beach to replenish themselves naturally.
To address question number one, we absolutely invite homeowners, property owners to get engaged and stay engaged as we go through the process to determine what are the best strategies for each location. So if there are concerns for homeowners, like you said, Venice and Hermosa, you know, we'd like to work together to come up with strategies that work for everybody. Of course, beaches and harbors, our primary focus is public access, beach operations, and ecology. We are not in a position to advocate for individual property owners. But absolutely, we do want to be part of the overall conversation, you know, and so that's what I would say on the first question. On the second question, there is not a one-size-fits-all answer for how groins do or do not cause or how they assist with accretion of sand. Each groin has to be evaluated and determined whether it is performing the way it was intended or whether it's not performing the way it was intended and it needs to be removed. So there's no one blanket answer to that second question.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
We have two comments online.
I have a question.
Erica, go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Lou. Warren, thank you for your presentation. I have a couple of questions. So Congratulations on receiving the funding from, or expected funding from, the Ocean Protection Council. Can you talk about how far that's going to take you? Maybe if you could bring up the timeline slide. And then my additional question is, so you showed three projects. I remember you had a meeting or a webinar maybe a month or two ago, and you, I believe more projects were covered, but is this timeline just for those three? Those are my two questions. Thanks.
This timeline is primarily for the three, the pilot projects. But in parallel with this, we do have a more complicated slide. In parallel with this are the SCOOP and the countywide shoreline strategy. The OPC grant is for the countywide shoreline strategy, which is expected to be a two-year-long process. We'd get a report at the end of that 2 years. Then we would move. The next phase of this would be, the intent is to come up with a public works plan so that we can then be prepared for implementation and have a comprehensive permitting mechanism with the Coastal Commission. Because these, of course, these, all of these beaches cross many jurisdictions, but Beaches and Harbors being the lead, we need a vehicle to facilitate permitting. And of course, with that, we also need to do environmental documentation. The $1 million would assist us with getting through that first 2 years of the strategic planning, and we're looking for other funding to make up the rest. We think overall it's about a $2 million effort.
So I have two additional. Michael?
Yes, thanks for the presentation. I was noticing a red area upshore of Zuma Beach, maybe around Trancas or Broad Beach. I was curious what that little red area was. Do you happen to know what that what we're talking about there and what's going on? Because I know we got a $55 million project coming in there at Broad Beach to replenish that area.
So that, red area represents the area that would be nourished. So this would be, you know, one of the ways that beach nourishment occurs is dredging offshore. Barges come up closer to the shore. The sediment is pumped onto the beach. That red area is contemplated for placement of the dredge material to widen Zuma Beach. It would be south of Trancas. It would be on the county beach.
Okay, so yeah, that red area is south of Trancas.
Correct.
Because that's private funds going in at Broad Beach, taking care of that replenishment, which that sand will come down, believe me, and hit into Paradise Cove. Also an area of concern is Abalone Cove and Portuguese Bend, as we mentioned. Just bringing that into the game that has to be replenished and looked at, because there's not much left there. So I can go on and get further information. I just wanted to see what that red dot upshore from Zoom.
David, and then we'll go online, and then we're going to come to Clark.
Thank you. Dave Peterson with Las Virgenes. I just wanted to speak in support of this item. I think it's tremendously important. In our watershed, in the Malibu Creek watershed, we have a lot of challenges with sedimentation. I think most of you are familiar with Ringe Dam. The major challenge with Ringe Dam is about 3 to 4 million cubic yards of sediment that needs to be removed, and an effort like this could be really helpful. The other thing is with the wildfires that we're experiencing, always following that in the winter when we see storms, that brings a lot of sediment into all of our water bodies. And so the inclusion of item number 2 here, looking at inland sediment and trying to beneficially reuse it, is going to be tremendously helpful. I realize not all of that sediment could be reused, but it's a really expensive undertaking to manage that sediment, and there's not really a good funding program to handle that. And then also I'll just mention in the flood control system, our dams along the foothills do a really, really excellent job of capturing our floodwaters, but they also capture a tremendous amount of sediment. And over time, that sediment builds up, and that begins to erode the capability of providing flood control. And so removing that sediment is really important, and that helps that system to work. But that sediment eventually needs a home. And if we can reuse it for our beaches, that would be amazing. And it seems like this effort would support that. And I'll just mention the county has recently adopted a county water plan. One of the key elements of that, there's 4 key priorities. One is watershed sediment management. And so this resiliency plan would directly support that. So I just wanted to encourage that we consider bringing this back for action at a future meeting.
Luke, did we have someone online?
Yes, Megan Edick.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Warren, for the presentation. Just have two quick questions. I'm excited about this project, but my first one is what the plans are for taking this inland sand, putting it on the beach, what the plans are for cleaning it to make sure there's no invasive species or contaminants. And then my second question is you have some great dune habitat that's going in. Are there any plans to keep dogs out of this habitat, out of, you know, nesting birds that might come in there or from digging up any of the native plants?
Thank you for those questions. The first question, how to keep organic matter and seeds and that kind of thing out of the sand, that is part of the scoop, is the, are all the measures of all the requirements that the sand has to be tested. So the sand would have to be tested and meet the chemical composition, the sand grain size, as well as the content of organic matter. So that essentially the sand has to be separated before it can be placed on the beach. It can't just be kind of picked up from where it is in a dam or a retention basin. It has to be sorted, it has to be cleaned before it can be placed on the beach. Regarding dogs on the beach, LA County's ordinance prohibits dogs on the beach. So that's just where we start. The challenge for LA County beaches and harbors is that we are not law enforcement. So that enforcement of the county ordinance of no dogs on the beach does largely rely on law enforcement and animal care and control. We have seen some models in other jurisdictions where members of the public have become basically ambassadors to help educate folks about why it's important to keep dogs off of the beach and those nexus with habitat and how dogs can, you know, scare away protected species. So we are very open at LA County to forging some kind of partnership if we can find a willing partner to help us with a basically an information education effort to help folks understand why we need to keep the dogs off the beach, number one, and number two, really keep them away from habitat.
Clark.
Yeah, so keeping the same area and following on Michael's comment, I wanted to remind everyone that at some point on the work plan years ago, we had the restoration of Trancas Lagoon, and it's still a project with LA, in cooperation with LA County, to restore fish passage potential there. So we've got some good upstream habitat potential. That had the cooperation of the landowner at the time with Trancas through their legal representation. So we completed the first part. Woolsey's happened. The topography is, bathymetry is completely changed. However, notably, representation, legal representation changed, and it's our understanding it's the same legal representation as at Broad Beach. And we've been unable to get any response about moving forward with the planning of the project. The LA County portion is continuing because that's the upstream kind of channelized section. But just wanted to point that out. You know, architects are good at scope creep. While you're looking at Zuma, let's not forget about Broad Beach and that potential steelhead small estuary for good years that remains there that could be added to our list of possible habitats for southern steelhead with the cooperation of the landowner's legal representation.
Annalisa.
Hey, Annalisa with Heal the Bay. Warren, thanks so much for the presentation. Really excited to hear about the Living Shorelines demonstration projects and excited to see how they turn out in the next few years. I did have a question about the LA County Regional Shoreline Management Strategy, just the fact that it's being presented separately from these Living Shoreline Demonstration projects, and curious if that strategy has a priority for Living Shorelines, particularly compared to shoreline hardening. And then just a quick follow-up of if there's going to be a kickoff for that strategy in January, will there be like a public meeting associated with the kickoff?
So, number one, the what we wanted to do is, based on the coastal resilience study, keep that kind of alive and moving forward. So we intentionally had some demonstration projects in there and started planning those with the understanding that we needed a comprehensive strategy as well. So they're not separate, they overlap. And we do expect that the regional strategy will include and prioritize, because it is our intent to prioritize nature-based solutions overall. That being said, this area of coastal management is constantly evolving, and we do want to have all the tools available on the table. So we will not say that we're not going to have any hard structures ever. We do, and we've had these conversations with Coastal Commission, and they're open to pilot projects that involve hard structures, especially if we can show that we're going to try something out, test it, and if it doesn't work, pull it out. So we do want to, you know, kind of think about what all the different options that are out there, what's going to work, and not kind of exclude any tools from the outset. Does that answer your questions?
Yeah, just curious if there will be a public meeting associated
Public meetings. We're still working on our strategy for public meetings. That being said, we've already built a stakeholder engagement list. So I expect that we're going to be reaching out to those folks first. And the public side of things is something we're still working on. It's going to take a tremendous amount of resources to meaningfully engage with the public on this, because we're serious about equity, and we need to reach folks that are coming inland from inland areas to the beach just as much as we need to continue engaging with people who live on the coast.
So thank you all. This has been a very good discussion. We had planned to preview the resolution. My suggestion is, given the time, that we resend it out to everyone. We are going to consider that resolution at the executive committee meeting next month and bring it back to the board. So you'll have ample opportunity to comment on that and give it feedback, given that we're already over. I don't think it's useful to try and do it on in real time at this point. We do not have a closed session today, glad to say. Unless someone has a burning issue they want to comment on, I'm going to say we move beyond the member comment at this point, but I don't want to cut it off if people do. Great. Well, then I'm going to remind folks that we have the executive committee coming up January 16th at 1 o'clock at the Edward C. Little Recycling Facility. And then we are going to have our next governing board meeting on February 21st. I remind everyone that is going to be election time. And so think about how much fun this is and how you would like to chair these meetings. I know somebody does. Anything else, Luke, that I need to cover, or Caitlin? In case, I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and thank you all very much.